Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Aftershock Monday episode. It's also part of our 12 days of the Comic Source, where we're bringing you 78 episodes in 12 days. Am I crazy to do that? Yes, I think I am. You can probably tell I'm feeling a little sleep deprived right now as we roll on with another Aftershock Monday episode. So for these eight episodes, I'm basically going through eight different number one issues from various Aftershock titles, ones that have come out fairly recently. You know, I've talked plenty about some of the classic titles that launched Aftershock, talked plenty about what a great publisher Aftershock is, but I haven't talked about a lot of the more recent series. You know, a few here and there on our new Wednesday episodes, spoiler free, of course, but this is a more deep dive into the first issues. You know, I'm telling you what happens. I'm giving you my opinion on how that breaks down and what it means for character. Some words about the art, some words about the aesthetics of these stories, the ideas, the concepts, the plots, the pacing, you know, all that good stuff that we do here on the Comic Source. And maybe you hearing about one of these number ones will hook you in. Maybe you will want to read the rest of the series. Most of the series I'm talking about have multiple issues out if they're not already completed with their whole arc. And they're all great. They're all really intriguing, great ideas, wonderful creators. It's really showing what's best about indie comics. So without further ado, I'm going to dive into the number one here. It is a book that I have talked about before on that New Comic Day episode, as I mentioned, when it first hit stands. And it's really great. We've had the writer on before to talk about some work he's done for Valiant. It's called Miles to Go. It's written by B. Clay Moore. The art is by Stephen Molnar. And we have letters by Thomas Maurer. So, you know, B. Clay, he's probably best known for his Hawaiian Dick creator-owned independent series. This is kind of in that same vein. You know, it's very grounded. It's very down to earth. But his characterization, the way he builds dramatic tension, the pacing, the plot, it's top notch, man. I love B. Clay's work. He really gets to the heart of characters in interesting ways. And the art by Stephen Molnar, gorgeous. Little details that make all the difference, that enhance the story, that enhance the characters. Not obvious details, but details that give you enough to, you know, where you notice it and it adds to the story. It's you know, pulling from ideas and foundational stuff that B. Clay has been telling in the story. You know, people's physiques are a big deal in this book, and facial expressions and body language. It's one of those books because, you know, it's not superheroes. It's not superpowers. It's not big and over the top. It's nuanced. And so it needs that kind of detail in the art, the little things that sell it and pull you in and give you more information, even if it's on a subconscious level. That's what this book does. So as we turn to the first page, we see a young girl. She's speaking directly out of the panel. She's actually speaking to somebody else. She's not breaking the fourth wall, but we're zoomed in on her face. And she's saying, we need to know why you did it. We got a job to do. We're totally going to do. We get a big fat bonus if we figured out why you did it. So maybe we won't do the job if you tell us. There's that too. And she's like, oh, actually, I probably should have said that first. And off panel, we have a guy saying, I don't know anything, please. You know, I got a kid. I mean, you're a kid. What are you, 12 or 13? Why is this even happening? And we see the young girl. She's pretty indifferent. This guy's pleas and cries of I got a kid, whatever. They're falling on deaf ears. And she's just casually blowing a bubble with her bubble gum. And she really doesn't care. So she says, whatever. Blows the guy's brains out as an older guy stands behind her. And the guy that had his brains blown out, we see he's duct taped to a chair and he's fallen over backwards at the force of the shot there. And as the scene shifts, we see that same young girl, but now much, much older, grown. She apparently was dreaming. And as she awakes, we see a voice off panel saying, Mom. She sits up in bed. She's addressing her young daughter. She says, you know, what's up, baby girl? Well, her daughter replies, well, I was going to make waffles, but we're all out of syrup. And one of the things you notice about the mother, who was the young girl who, you know, shot this guy in the head, totally brutal, she's ripped, man. Like she's got some musculature to her. she is in great shape. And she tells her daughter, well, you know, I promised Marco I was going to drop by today. Let's go by IHOP on my way over. It'll be my treat. And her daughter says, I hate that place, but I want pancakes. She's like, you can see she's just kind of weighing the options. Oh, you're so evil, mother. You know, we know that she's going to give in. And in this panel with her saying that again, you know, all credit to Stephen Molnar. You can see the look on her face that she's torn. She's like, I really don't like that place. You know, she's biting her lower lip. You can just feel the, you know, how she's vacillating. And again, it's just a really great detail. So she goes walking down the hall, sort of arm in arm with her daughter. And we see the mother from behind. And again, what you're struck with is just how physical she is. You know, she almost looks like a bodybuilder. I mean, she's not huge and grotesque, whatever, but she's very fit. Her muscles are pronounced. She has broad shoulders. She has a broad back and you know, biceps. She's definitely a physical specimen. As she's walking down the hall, her phone rings and she tells Niles, who's on the other end of the phone, to hold on a second. And she tells her daughter, you know, go fix your hair and we'll go in a bit. And her daughter replies, okay, is that dad? And apparently it is. Niles is the father here. And she says, hi. And Aaliyah, we find out, is the daughter's name. The mother relays that saying, you know, Aaliyah says, hi. And, you know, what's up, Niles? Hurry up. We're about to go eat breakfast and run errands. And Niles says, well, you know, I was getting ready for work. I wanted to make sure we're still on for tonight. And he's like, yeah, and I know what you said. I'm just, you know, I'm glad you're willing to talk. And and tell, you know, Aaliyah that I said hey back, and I'll see you tonight, Amara. So the mother's name is Amara, and as she hangs up the phone, Aaliyah is saying, "What, are you and Dad going out tonight?" And Amara responds, "Well, we're going to have a conversation. Let's say it's a date." And Aaliyah wants to go. I mean, clearly she wants to spend time with both her parents together, and you can see the look on her mother's face. Again, credit to Stephen Molnar for giving us so much in a panel without any dialogue, right? You can just see, we can tell by the look on Amara's face that that's not something that's going to happen. Ali is not going to get to go. You get the impression that, you know, they're not getting back together, but yet Amara loves her daughter and she, you know, certainly doesn't want to let her down. And, you know, she's not looking to give her bad news or make her feel bad. So she says, well, you know, we're going to be out past your bedtime. Paige is coming over to watch you. And she's kind of ruffling her hair and says, you know what? Maybe you should wash this mop before we go. And I love this little bit of role reversal right here from Aaliyah. She says, yeah, because I'm taking tips from a woman who thinks a rubber band is a scrunchie. And so with the smirk on her face, Amara says, you know, Vidal Sassoon, why don't you go get in the car? And Aaliyah, you know, got to get the last word in, says, I don't even know who that is. So the scene then switches. There's a couple of clearly federal agents here sitting in a car. And you can tell because they've got black suits on, white shirts, black tie. One's got the mirrored sunglasses. And the younger of the two is saying to his partner, who's an older African-American gentleman, you know, it bothers me. That's all I'm saying. Since when do we just let loose ends go without blinking an eye? And his partner responds, well, this whole cleanup operation is sloppy enough without dragging some unidentified player into the field. So, you know, we're going to follow orders. And so the younger asks the older, well, do you have anything clear on her? Like, do we know who she is? Like, you know, what's the deal? And he says, well, she looks sort of Indian, like red dot Indian to me. I'm not sure, though. But the little girl, her daughter, looks different. I'm guessing her daddy's one of my people. So he's saying, African-American. So clearly once we see the picture of the laptop they're looking on, they're talking about Amara, the little girl would be Aaliyah. And then, the daddy obviously would be Niles. And, the younger of these two agents says, you know, I don't even read this old guy as some kind of threat. So maybe we don't worry about this Indian side piece is what he calls her. And the older one says, well, let's see if we can get a sample of something when you're in the room. Like, we can put her through a rapid test just to ease your mind, you know, just in case you're worried about Amara being a loose end. And again, like, we're at this point, it's still a pretty big mystery. Like, who are these guys? Why are they, who's the old guy they're talking about? And what does Amara have to do with any of it? So the young guy says, wait, well, when I'm in the room, why am I going to be the one in the room? We're not going to draw straws on this one. And the older guy says to the younger, whose name apparently is Carver, he says, Carver, someone's got to keep them busy at the front desk, and you aren't exactly a people person. And we see as they're having this conversation for the first time, we see from behind them, and we see they're looking out the front window of their car, and we see a hospital there. So as the scene shifts, Amara is sitting in a hospital room. She's talking to an old guy. So here we go. We're filling in some blanks here. And Amara's asking the old guy, hey, do you remember a guy named Wasp Waltkowski? And the old guy, no. Said, well, he was a second-rate arms dealer. He got in the way of some feds that were tracking him. He's like, okay, yeah, I remember him. As much as I remember any of these days, like, why should I want to? And Amara says, because I just dreamed about him last night, what we did to him. So clearly, a Wasp Waltkowski is the guy that got shot in the head. And the old guy must have been the guy that was standing behind Amara when she did it. And he's saying, why are you thinking about this stuff? Why are you talking about this stuff? This is the kind of stuff you keep dead and buried. And when I kick off in a week or a month or whenever this afternoon, you bury it with me. And Amara says, well, yeah, fine. Sorry. You know, it's been rough lately. I mean, it's always been rough, but now it's even more rough than usual. Niles isn't handling the idea of divorce well. And Aaliyah acts like it's just water off her back. Like, you know, she's Amara clearly has a lot of stuff going on. And this old guy's like, hey, kid. You know, I'm dying, right? I'm good with it, sure. But, you know, maybe think about all the time you have left compared to what I'm looking at. You know, think about that girl you got that you never want to bring it in with you. You know, you never want this to affect Aaliyah. And Amara says, you know, you never were very good at life lessons, Marco, but you do have a point. So she had mentioned to, you know, her daughter earlier about how she was going to see Marco. They'd stop IHOP along the way. So clearly Marco's some kind of mentor, a person that trained her, what have you. And it sounds like Amara's tried to leave that life behind, Marco dying. And that would make sense if he was some kind of a assassin or hitman. Why all of a sudden these federal agents want him dead? And that's not even supposedly what federal agents do. You know, maybe they work for some black agency where things are all a secret, that sort of thing. So Amara does say, well, yeah, the old days, they've been popping in my head a lot more than lately. And I can't explain why, but it feels like whenever my life starts to fall apart or something's not working correctly, like my brain wants to retreat to, and she interrupts herself and says, oh my God, I almost said a happier time. And Marco, he kind of understands that. He goes, you know, it's not so crazy for people dealing with stress to long for a time when they had things more under control or had less to worry about. And I'm probably taking an express lane to hell for even getting you involved at such a young age. But you were pretty confident back then. You know, you like Aaliyah, I guess, you know, water off her back. World's a lot simpler when you're young. Things are black and white. And Amara's teasing him, saying, you're definitely going to hell, old man, but, you know, save a spot for me and make sure you find us a place to drink when I get there. And, you know, Marco, for all his lessons or pulling her into a life that maybe wasn't suitable for a young girl, still obviously cares about her, because he said, you know what, just do right by your little one and maybe you can save yourself the trip. Maybe you won't end up down there. So as Amara leaves, she's walking down the hall. We see the nurse's station, and there's Aaliyah. She's sitting there talking to the nurses, and Aaliyah's telling them, I don't even know what they talk about. And one of the nurses says, well, here's your mom now, hon. Maybe she'll share the secrets with you. And Amara thanks them for keeping an eye on Aaliyah. And they say, oh, no problem, Mrs. Bishop, and they leave. And as they're leaving, or right after they leave, the two agents come walking in. They don't see each other. And the older of the two, the African-American agent, goes up to the nurses and says, my name's Calder Wade. I'm an agent, and this is my associate, Bobby Carver. We need to have a word with one of your residents. And as Wade keeps talking to them, Carver heads down to the room. And Marco's appears to be sleeping. Wade takes a syringe out and he's about to inject something into his IV. But Marco's just feigning sleep and he hasn't lost all his skills. He reaches out and he grabs Carver by the balls, like hard. And you can see the pain on Carver's face. And Carver yanks him out of bed and ends up choking him to death. And then lays there in pain for a couple of minutes, stands up, runs his hand through his hair. I mean, this guy's hurting. You can tell. Again, great, great work from Stephen Molnar. I mean, we go from all these panels with no dialogue. We go from Carver kind of on his knees, trying to get upright, to him falling down on the floor in pain and then struggling to his feet. And then finally on his feet, running his hand through his hair with a God damn it. This guy, you know, it hurt. What happened to him hurt. So now he's got to clean up the mess. So he grabs Marco and he takes him into the bathroom. Meanwhile, out at the nurse's desk, Calder's showing the nurses pictures on his phone, you know, doing exactly what he was talking about in the car, about how he can distract people. You know, he's a people person. And all of a sudden, Carver comes running out of the room and says, "Hey, you know, we got a problem." He says, I walked in and he was in the bathroom and I was waiting and waiting and waiting. I went to check on him and apparently he fell against the wall. So they get a doctor and apparently, you know, he's dead. And when the agents go back out to the car, the older of the agents, Calder Wade, says, "Well, that didn't exactly go as planned." And you can still see that Bobby Carver, he's still in some pain. He leans back in his seat. And he's like, cut me some slack, Wade. The old bastard just about crushed my balls. But I mean, no one's going to question a sick old man about falling down in the bathroom. Yeah, they're just happy he's gone. They don't have to take care of him anymore, basically. And Wade goes, "Okay, well, the lipstick on this glass is a shade darker than yours. So I'm assuming our Indian girl left it. So let's get some DNA from the rim and we'll hustle it over for a rapid DNA test and see if we get a hit. And you don't have to worry so much about the whole loose end thing." And then Carver says, "Great, then we can move on to the next half dead target they send our way." So apparently that's what these guys do. They must work for some black bag outfit where they just go around killing people on behalf of the U.S. government, apparently. Because Wade even responds to that remark by saying, "Yeah, all in the name of national security, Agent Carver. Keep repeating that until your pension kicks in and you'll be fine." Meanwhile, we see a phone ringing next to an ashtray full of cigarettes. An old guy answers it. Looks to be around the same age as Marco was. And he says, "Yeah, this is he." And then again, look on the face. "Uh-huh. And how did he?" Again, look on the face in the next panel. Very suspicious. "A broken neck in the bathroom, seriously? No, fine, thanks." And he hangs up, puts his hand on his head. This old guy, just like Marco, knows what's up. And immediately alarm bells are probably just going off in his mind, right? Like Marco might have been dying, cancer, old age, you know, congestive heart failure, what have you. But he was the man back in the day. No way he fell in the bathroom and broke his neck. So I'm assuming this guy is an old partner or something along those lines. And, you know, he hears that he died and he's not too shocked. But then as soon as he hears broken neck in the bathroom, it's like alarm bells go off. And again, Steve Molnar, great artwork here, showing the suspicion in the face. So whoever this guy is, he grabs the keys to his car and heads out there, opens up the trunk to double check. And his trunk is just full of guns, like Uzi, AK-47, 50 caliber, you know, boxes of ammunition. This guy's loaded for bear. And then he picks up a notebook from the back of his car, opens it up, and it says Amara Bishop, 321 Redhead Lane. We know that's the Amara that we've been, you know, following in the first part of the book. So is this guy now going to go put a hit on Amara? Like, what's going on? Why did the death of Marco trigger this guy to all of a sudden seek out Amara Bishop? I guess we're going to have to wait and find out. Meanwhile, at a federal building, the guy that was running the DNA on Amara gets a hit very quickly. And Wade says, "What? Come on, man. There's no way you've gotten a CODIS hit already." Because the guy's like, "Holy crap." Like, really surprised that something came up so quickly. And the technician goes, "No, it's not CODIS. There's a separate database we run first. It's only a few hundred profiles, not the millions that are in CODIS. And it's usually just, you know, perfunctory. Like, we just do it because we're supposed to, and nothing ever comes of it. But this time we got a hit, and it comes with some pretty specific instructions, some pretty recent instructions. And Carver's like, so what does that mean? We got to reroute our assignment. We got to go take this girl out. Like, you know, what's the deal? Should we be sticking around? And the technician says, no, this stuff involves a whole different classification. No offense, but I think you guys are free to go. And Carver and Wade look at each other, and they immediately know something's up. Like, they've been doing this for way too long not to be suspicious by this. Clearly, this is something above their pay grade, but they want to know what's going on for sure. And again, the looks on their faces, they're just done so well. And I have to say, especially in this particular panel, Wade looks like Bill Duke, like the actor. If you don't know who Bill Duke is, if you've ever seen Predator, he's the black guy with the shaved head. He's been in he's a great actor, been in a few different things. It looks dead on like Bill Duke, just the kind of expression Bill Duke would have. He's also in that movie with Mel Gibson, Payback. And this is like one of the looks that he would give when he was playing that dirty cop in Payback. So I love it. I absolutely love this look, this knowing look between the two agents. You know, tell they've been partners for a while. They can communicate without even talking. Because when that technician says, you guys are free to go, they're immediately like, no, we need to know what's up. So they head outside and they're talking. Carver's like, whole different classification, huh? And Wade/Bill Duke says, I'm telling you, man, with this administration, there are spooks digging up the bones of old spooks. And somehow the NSA is an afterthought. So I guess these guys work for the NSA, not exactly a black bag, but maybe a black bag arm of the NSA. And clearly they want to know what's going on. They're not just going to let this go. Meanwhile, we see the old guy who had the trunk full of guns cruising down the road. And looks like he's off for a long drive. Not sure where he's headed to yet. Meanwhile, at Amara's house, Aaliyah's watching her get ready. And Amara's telling her, you need to behave tonight. Don't give her any trouble. I know you think she's boring, but I'd rather not have any late night calls about you not wanting to brush your teeth. And Aaliyah, she's just one smart kid, but does have a little bit of a mouth on her. She's a little bit of a smart ass. She says, blah, 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 whatever. I'm always good. Like, I always behave, whatever. And she wants to know if her dad, Niles, and Amara are going to be talking about whether or not he's moving back in or not. And, Amara's not making any problem. I mean, we just based on the face of Amara earlier when Aaliyah asked her if it was a date, we already know. But, she's a kid. She wants her parents to be together, so you can completely understand where she's coming from. But Amara doesn't want to get her hopes up, so she says, well, we just need to talk about some things. But even if he doesn't move back in, he still wants to spend as much time as he can with you. And Aaliyah's kind of complaining, his apartment's so dumb. He's got an Xbox, but his Wi-Fi never works. He never has any food. He's always doing boring work stuff. And Amara says, well, give him a break, kid. He never had to take care of himself before, much less a picky brat. And that might have to do with why they split up. Amara, just based on who she is, what she used to do, the fact she used to be some kind of a hit woman or what have you, based on her physique, based on the way she carries herself, again, going to the body language that and that character acting that Stephen Molnar puts in his sequential visual storytelling, you just know that Amara is somebody who handles her business. And just from the little brief panels we've seen with Niles, we know that is completely not the case. So you get a feeling that Amara might have been attracted to him at first because he was everything that wasn't her life. He was probably soft and sweet and gentle. And she marries the guy and realizes that soft and sweet and gentle is okay. But when it comes with mama's boy, never take care of himself before, doesn't handle his business, I imagine that probably got old pretty quick. So again, with details like body language, body type, character acting, those little things like that can show you everything, can tell you everything, can enrich the story. And when we see Niles on the phone earlier, he's standing in his kitchen, he's got a little bit of a pot belly, here's Amara who's ripped and in great shape. Marta's house is clean and tidy. Scenes we see with Niles, his kitchen looks kind of messy. And then we get this information from Aaliyah about, you know, buys an Xbox, doesn't have good Wi-Fi, doesn't ever have any food in the house, always working, you know, it's the whole Friday thing. Got peanut butter, no jelly, ham, no burger, you know, gets an Xbox, no Wi-Fi, has a fridge, no food. So they're not getting back together. I'm sorry, Aaliyah. That's just the way it is. So as Amara is finishing getting ready, some headlights flash across her bedroom window. She says, oh good, that's gotta be Paige. And she heads out to open the door. Meanwhile, Aaliyah is reading a book on her mom's bed, and she hears a noise. She starts walking down the hall. She says, Mom. And there's Amara in the doorway yelling at Aaliyah to stay back. And in the doorway, we see a guy dressed all in black, hood over his head, and he's got a gun pointed at Amara's head. And we finish the story with a big blam and a splatter of blood as Aaliyah yells out, Mom. That is one heck of a cliffhanger. That's all I got to say. It definitely makes you want to read the next issue. Like, did we just read this whole issue and get invested in who Amara is and what her past is and all that, only to have her killed at the end of issue one? Or did she, with whatever skills she learned when she was younger and a hit man, hit woman, hit person, whatever, however you want to call it, an assassin, did she turn the tables on this would-be attacker? What's next, right? What's next? So again, expertly paced, great cliffhanger to pull you back in for issue two. The artwork from Stephen Molnar, and I'm sure a lot of it, you know, as far as character descriptions and acting and poses, you know, B. Claymore may have had some input into some of that. But regardless, I think the combination, the collaboration between B. Clay and Stephen Molnar, absolutely excellent. The little details that add so much. It enriches a story like this because, again, there aren't, you know, it's not big superhero action with, you know, dynamic powers and colorful costumes to suck you in. So you need the little nuance. You need the other little ideas that are done so well in this book. Everyday stuff that clues you in, you know, that pulls you in. I mean, the body type of Amara, the body type of Niles, the juxtaposition of how clean and dirty their houses are. Carver getting his balls absolutely crushed and then struggling to recover. You know, they're dedicating real estate in the comic to this. It must be important. But as a reader, you've got to invest too. You got to pay attention and read into that, because it's easy to gloss over those panels. There's no dialogue. There's no words to read. But when you're reading a comic, you got to pay attention to as much what's not being said as what is being said. Pay attention to the art. So again, I think this is a great comic. You know, Aftershock does it again with, you know, B. Claymore and Stephen Molnar and, you know, two creators that have created something really special. And Thomas Maurer on the letters. I talk all the time about how important it is to make sure your word balloons are paced out correctly, so you can read it at the correct pace. Because I just talked about how great the pacing is in this comic. It has everything to do with how fast you read it, how the letters are spaced out, where the breaks are for lines. I mean, there's so much that goes into lettering that people don't realize, and all that works really well also. So, you know, I don't want to sell him short, because again, it's done really, really well. I absolutely love this comic. Highly, highly recommend picking it up. So I'll wish everybody a Merry Christmas. I'm glad you all are listening to these episodes. Downloads are up. Hope, you know, people on vacation or winter break or what have you. Maybe you're stuck at home. You're just listening while you're working. Whatever the case may be, we're happy to be putting out all these extra episodes for you here in December. We hope you all have happy holidays and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Whatever you celebrate, if it's Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or whatever, we just hope it's a joyous time. We hope you're all being responsible and safe. If you're not able to see your family, I'm right there with you. You know, maybe do a little virtual Christmas gathering on Zoom or Google Hangouts or Skype or what have you. Next year, hopefully everybody has the vaccine and we're all much safer and happier, and we can get back together in person, and we can look back on 2020 Christmas and just be glad that it's over. So again, just hoping everybody out there is safe and happy and celebrating Christmas the best you can and making the best of it. I mean, it's still the holiday season. It's still a time to remember the less fortunate, and that we all could stand to be nicer to one another. So again, I hope everybody's enjoying this gift to you from the Comic Source of all these extra episodes. And I want to thank everybody for listening and for all the support this year. It means a lot. So with that said, we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.